York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting live but not video streaming today, because I'm on location, from our studios out of New York City. Today, we're going to look at everything involving health, including treating dementia, with a unique and very interesting non-toxic therapy. We're also going to use some study from the University College Dublin in Ireland about yeasted food and why it's best to stay away from a lot of these. And from our audio files today, I've got a good selection, and I try to listen to what people have to say about what topics they like, what's interesting to them. I'm going to do a commentary, as I promised, on how the medical students can use their position within medical schools to start protesting the influence of profit-driven incentives, drugs, and other therapies, and even the cost of the hospital stays. It's obscene. And instead give you a more practical way. It would be a lot healthier, save a lot of lives, prevent a lot of disease, and save a lot of money. Universal health care, I'll show you how we can do it and how we can save money in the process. Also, we've all seen this intramural clash between the right and the left concerning Russia and Russiagate and why Putin is evil and it's our most dreaded enemy. But what about when Hillary Clinton was running for president? She had something completely different to say. We'll play that clip, the contradictions, and just use common sense. We involve ourselves not just in meddling in elections, but we actually engage in 89 different regime changes where we didn't like the people being democratically voted on, so we sponsored military coups or anti-coups. In other words, we got our person into power by a lot of really down and dirty means, including causing civil wars in countries, causing hundreds of thousands of deaths. So why aren't any of the media explaining this, that Russia meddling in an election, well, we meddle in their election, but they still haven't dodged this issue. This all centered around leaked emails, over 33,000 leaked emails from the DNC, mainly John Podesta's. That showed that Hillary Clinton had contradicted herself. That came from the DNC, and 12 different intelligence experts, including Wim Benny and Ray McGovern, among others, said that it wasn't possible. The technology was not possible based upon what was leaked to have done it electronically, which meant that someone inside there had to do it. We believe that person's name was Seth and that he was murdered, and there are questions about who murdered him, but he was the one, according to a former ambassador from the Ukraine, from Great Britain, that was handed, meaning Seth from the DNC, handed a thumb drive and documents to him because he was angry at how his favorite candidate, Bernie Sanders, had been treated by being denied, legitimately denied, the nomination. So we're going to deal with that. We're going to deal with corporations telling you which jobs that they're going to disappear. They're telling us this. The clip I'm going to play you is a very rare clip. It's from one of their meetings where they're explaining this is the future. We never have a chance to get inside these meetings to know the truth of what they're thinking. We only see the PR spin on the outside. Also, George Carlin talking about death. And if we get to it, Chris Hedges from Truth Dig on killing Gaza. And your feedback throughout the program. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. And this information is interesting because it's from the University College Dublin in Ireland. It was published in the journal PLOS Pathogens. and it talks about a major cause of drug-resistant clinical yeast infections is the same species previously regarded as non-pathogenic and commonly used in the biotechnology and food industries. Candida krusei, K-R-U-S-E-I, is a drug-resistant yeast species and one of the five most prevalent causes of clinical yeast infections. It's responsible for significant levels of death and sickness in immunocompromised patients. By contrast, a yeast species called Pica, P-I-C-H-I-A, has been considered to be safe because it was used for centuries to make food products like fermented cassava and cacao and fermented milk and maize beverages. It also has a growing role in biotechnology for the production of bioethanol and high-value chemicals. But to date, relatively little genetic investigation has been carried out on strains of it. And to address this gap in knowledge, a group of scientists sequenced the genomes of 30 clinical and environmental strains of these two species, and the results show conclusively that they are the same species with genomes that are 99.6% identical in DNA sequence. Moreover, the two species show similar levels of resistance to antifungal drugs. So, what that means is that if you have a really bad yeast infection like Candida albicans and you were to be given a drug, there's a high probability that it may not work. And so what we need is we need to start looking at ways that can naturally ferment things, foods, without using these yeasts as starters. Now, of course, think of all the bread where yeast is used. Now, it doesn't mean that all yeast, but two very popular yeast species can cause disease in humans. That's the bottom line. So just imagine for all this time we were thinking it was safe and told it was safe, only to find out it wasn't. Now, people who are on raw foods diets, principally, or living foods diet, that's what I'm on, 75% raw and 25% lightly cooked, but still at such a low temperature, it only liberates the nutrition inside and does not in any way alter the quality or quantity, actually makes them more available. For example, when you heat at low temperatures tomatoes to make a tomato sauce, you're getting more of the nutrients and the polyphenols from the tomatoes. That's very important. You actually get more benefit from eating tomato sauce than you do eating a raw tomato. And the same is true with your cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, kale, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, turnips. By heating them, you liberate the nutrients, making them more digestible and available for assimilation. Anyhow, by having green juices, and especially wheatgrass juice, spiked with ginger and lemon juice, you're able to kill a lot of yeast. And that way you don't end up having a lot of yeast harbored in the intestines. And sometimes people don't realize that you can smell the yeast on people's breaths, bad breath. And they're not aware of it. They'll brush their teeth, they'll floss, they'll use mouthwash, and still, you know, 10 minutes later, the breath smells again. When they wake up in the morning, they had a really pungent, bad-smelling, tasting breath. That's frequently from candida in their intestines. So if you go on lots of the juices every day for about 2 weeks, taking lots of vitamin C throughout the day, and apple cider vinegar about an ounce in the morning, you'll be able to clean a lot of this candida right out of your body. From Tohoku University in Japan, they're treating dementia with the healing waves of sound, meaning ultrasound applied to the brain can help treat patients with dementia. And the ultrasound waves applied to the whole brain improve cognitive function in this experiment. and stimulated vascular release of this vascular dementia hold in the Alzheimer's and its negative effects. So that's important, just letting you know what's happening around the world. It doesn't mean it's going to come here quickly, but it'll get here, because anything that's working elsewhere generally is picked up here. From the University of Pennsylvania, they're saying that greening of vacant lots reduces the feelings of depression in city dwellers. Now, we've all gone through cities where there's a nice area. If you go down to Baltimore, you'll see that you go through a lot of downtrodden neighborhoods, and then you come to beautiful parks and restaurants and walking galleries. It's very nice. They've rehabilitated downtown near the wharfs. They've done the same out in Detroit. You have green pockets. So greening vacant urban land significantly reduces feelings of depression and improves overall mental health for the surrounding residents. And that's from the Perelman School of Medicine and the School of Arts and Science, University of Pennsylvania. But this isn't the only one. This is a new randomized controlled study. It was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Network Open. So the findings say this. Cities across America where 15% of land is deemed vacant almost always are blighted or filled with trash and overgrown vegetation. So for the first time, the research team measured the mental health of Philadelphia residents before and after nearby vacant lots had been converted into green spaces, as well as residents living near untreated abandoned lots and those that just received trash cleanup. They found that people living within a quarter of a mile radius of a green lot had a 41% decrease in feelings of depression compared to those who lived near the lots that had not been cleaned. So this is important. This is something that we, the people, can engage in. Because frequently, even people listening right now, you have lots near you and you probably feel, well, the city should clean it up. It's filled with garbage and debris. So everybody just walks by it. So what I'm more than happy to do, and let's start with some really densely populated areas where it's kind of a blight to people. You're always going to have rats hanging out there because rats spread vermin and they spread disease. I'll help you. I'll donate to the cause, my time. I'll do design, because that's one of the things I do, is landscape architecture. And we'll take a lot and we'll rehabilitate it for the benefit of all the people in that area. Just reach out to me. When you have a lot, take photographs of it. And then see that the lot is vacant, or we would have permission to do that, or get permission from the city. And then we'll get together a group of people and go in there, and from this audience, we'll do it together. And we'll clean it up. We'll show how we do it. I'll bring my film crew, so we'll start with the lot in its worst condition. We'll get people's comments about the lot, how long has it been like this, what impact does it have, and then we'll show everyone working and how people from all walks of life and backgrounds come together cooperatively to change something that benefits the people there. And then we'll stream this and we'll put it in the schools. I'll stream it to all the schools in that area, showing that this is what you could do. And then we'll send it over the internet around the world so everywhere people can benefit. People like to see that something can be done. Once Bannister broke the four-minute mile that no expert said was possible, in the next 2 weeks, other people did it. What were they waiting on? They needed to believe it could be done. That's one of the reasons I invite people to come on this program who've made major changes in their health, to inspire hope in those who are frustrated with their lack of success of treatment outcomes, to let them know, hey, if that person could do it, so too could you. So you can send information, again, photographs of the lot, contacting the city to make sure that you would have permission to do it. And then from once we know we have permission and where the lot's at, then I'll organize people from this audience and we'll start cleaning up lots. And I'll set aside monies that will help to get trees and plants and gardening supplies and all the things, good quality topsoil. We'll have to take out the topsoil that's there, probably about 6 inches. We'll refill it. And then we'll rehabilitate, bring beauty, rose gardens. Just, we can do all this. We can do this. And then look at how good it's going to be according to this study. prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com. Now, on that same theme, Cornell University found that school gardens help to prevent nutritional deficiencies in children. We all know, or should at this point, that a lot of American children are undernourished, either due to economic circumstances or where they're living and lack of availability of healthy choices or lack of a parental understanding of the real nutritional needs of their children. They're not eating right. They're certainly not eating their vegetables and fruits. And they're also not having healthy juices. They're having health drinks. So vegetable and fruit intake has been linked to lower heart disease risk, stroke, obesity, diabetes, hypertension. So the importance of children receiving their vegetables and fruits is really relevant. According to the CDC's second nutritional report, some of the most common nutrient deficiencies in America could be alleviated with a greater intake of vegetables like spinach, broccoli, mushrooms. So now they're beginning to have farming in preschool, which could teach kids how to grow their own food. In fact, 93% of kids age 1 to 18 did not meet the U.S. nutrition requirements. And that means they're not getting this. So in Arkansas and Iowa, in New York and Washington State, they've analyzed the vegetable intake among low-income elementary school children. And the study published in the Journal of Preventive Medicine shows that children who attend elementary schools with school gardens also have a greater ability of vegetables at home. And this effect is strongest among low-income kids in second and third grade. And So these school garden programs, also called garden interventions, include raised bed gardening kits and age-appropriate lessons to accommodate them. Now, in one of my latest documentaries, Poverty Inc., I drove down filming throughout the South, and I filmed in New Orleans. And there was, in a nondescript neighborhood, in the back of a building that just looked like a barracks, there was a garden. And it was a public garden. And it was beautifully done. And they were growing a wide variety of food there. And then about a mile over in the lower Ninth Ward, and lower means it's below sea level, and when you drive into the lower Ninth Ward, you'll see on houses at about the 8 to 9 foot level, a watermark. That's how high up Katrina floods have come. And by the way, to this day, that at least 95% of all the damaged homes are still damaged or been destroyed, and those people simply displaced. But I was told that there was a person there who had started a garden, and he was from Brooklyn. Okay, which street? We don't know. What's his name? We don't know. All right. Give me a little hint. Well, he drives what looks like a converted bus. Okay, good. Simple enough. I plot out the lower Ninth Ward, and I drive from one end of a street over a block down the other. So I'm doing it up and down every single street. And then in one street, there I see a truck. Well, it's not a truck. It's like a bus. And I get out, and there's a house. And there's a gate, and I go in the gate, and here's a really nicely done garden. And there's three or four greenhouses, hoop greenhouses, H-O-O-P, which means there was no electricity. They simply had taken some hoops and bent some hoops and then covered those hoops with plastic tarpon, and they had a door on it. You go in the door, and it's about 80 degrees inside and about 48 degrees to 50 degrees outside. I actually saw the temperature, and they have all this stuff growing inside these little greenhouses. And then I went into the house to try to find someone. What was interesting, there was no floors. There was no floors. It was just dirt floor. But I was looking at the rooms, and they were extremely neat. And one had several beds in it, and people had their clothes neatly folded on tables. And there you could see the dust from the dirt rising up and in this neat room. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Very conscientious of these people. So then I went outside, and here the guy told me, a guy came over from the neighborhood, and he said, yeah, there are about 20 of us who work here, and we each do different things. And he showed me an entire lot, like 60 by 120 feet, stacked about 8 foot high of different types of debris, like leaves, but also food that had been collected from restaurants and stores and made into a compost pile. And the compost had created gorgeous soil, and they were selling the soils, organic soil. It wasn't sprayed. And that's how they made their business. And then they shared that, whatever money came in, they all just kind of split it equally. And then other young people in the neighborhood that I spoke with said, well, we had one of two choices. There was no help for us here, none. So we either sold drugs or we did this thing over here with this food thing, and we didn't know what it was. Now, every Saturday morning and every Wednesday morning, there's long lines of people wanting to come in here and get their produce because they give you a lot of produce. He said you can take two big bags of produce home for $20. So we're eating healthy in the neighborhood. And he said, now there are other gardens starting down there where kids want to do that. And so I commended all the young men and women that I saw there. I never got to meet the guy who actually started this. When I go back in a couple weeks, I intend to go over and film him and just to say thank you for what you're doing for the poor and the homeless in this area, and the model of teaching and character development of doing something that helps the community and helps themselves. That's the latest on health and healing. So, but if you're a school teacher, and if you don't have a garden in your school, the kind of gardens I've seen now are really antiquated. They're only seasonal. They don't give you a lot of food. And sometimes you have to wait months before you can harvest. So if you reach out to me, if you're a principal, administrator, or teacher, or a parent who wants to coordinate with the school, I will help you. I'll show you the latest designs that I've created. I'll give them as a public service free to you. I'll even come and help you build them so you can have fresh produce 12 months a year and lots of it, far more, 10, 20 times more than what you would normally get. Just reach out by going to prnstudio@gmail.com. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
It's been a long time coming, but I know.
Do you know who that great voice is from? Let's see how many people in the audience get it right. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. Now, yesterday I played you what would be the beginning of an effort to put together a lot of pieces to this puzzle of regaining sovereignty over our freedom of choice and thought. I'm always going to listen to people who have ideas. I'm going to measure them. I'm going to go to a place of neutrality and see if I can understand what someone is saying, understand the context in which it should be placed, understand their perspective from their different life experiences. And if there's something that makes sense is reasonable, use it. If it doesn't, leave it go. And I've seen it for a long time, government agencies, both local and state and federal, mainly federal now, assuming that they have the right to think for us, to judge for us, to determine for us, and demand that we comply. And I'm against that. I'm opposed to this giant cancer growing on the psyche of the American public. These extended bureaucracies. Now, we need governments, but we need a government that has got good civilian input, just like a police department. Police departments should be decentralized. They should be by neighborhoods, and the police should come from the neighborhood. The police should be our neighbors, our friends, our family. And then we should have the elders in every neighborhood be on a police board that meets with the community so the community has a way of expressing its grievances or its needs, and then they pass that down to the local police so the police can act appropriately and be there to serve and protect all of us who are at least responsible in our thoughts. Realize we must have some police protections. You could not imagine how bad it would be if, when you needed the police, none would ever come. And indeed, there are areas of America where that's pretty much the case. Budgets just can't afford the type of police. And then it's a spectrum. But then you look at police departments that are heavily funded but also heavily militarized, who shoot first and talk later, who are making arrests based upon how someone speaks with them rather than has someone broken the law. Time and again, we see these arrests where they resisted arrest. But what were they arrested for? Resisting arrest. But did they commit a crime? Did they commit a crime that represented a reason to arrest them? No. So in other words, your only cause for arresting someone is that they resisted you. Well, wouldn't you normally resist someone, at least verbally, saying, I've done nothing wrong, I'm not going to give you any more information, I wish to speak with my lawyer, and at least know your rights? And today, that could cause you to be beaten down and or killed. So we've gone on a spectrum from what police should be to the worst case scenario. And that does not mean I'm indicting all police. That would be ridiculous. You see, we see the harm, the lack of good judgment, the inappropriate behavior on the internet or elsewhere of some police, but what we don't see are all the police who do the right thing for the right reasons at the right time. And we must always keep a balance in mind. And I believe the vast majority of police do the right thing for the right reasons. It's just they are not acknowledged for it. So when someone tells me what I should do, I have to ask, if I find that what you're telling me to do, to vaccinate my child, to give my child the teen screen, then A, you are denying me my informed consent, or my child. You're testing children without parental consent in school. You are deeming that your knowledge and the experts that you have consulted to create these laws are honest, objective, and true science is on their side. But almost all the time, we find that you do not have good science. There's massive amounts of proprietary or for-profit science, and you're there at the behest of the pharmaceutical industry. Pathologize normal behavior. An example was a young girl, I think she was around 13 years old or so, and I think, I'm not sure, but it was somewhere in Indiana or Michigan, and she took a simple screen teen test. Next thing you know, she's being detained, and she was taken to a psychiatric hospital, and she was put in it against her will, and she was kept there for a long period of time. She was drugged. She was put in restraints because she answered two questions in a way that targeted her during teen screen. She said that she didn't like to go to parties, and she kept her room neat. And they diagnosed that as compulsive obsessive disorder and social anxiety disorder. She had neither. That's how the nanny state, with all the children in the world, or in America, originally created by George Bush, but promoted mainly by Hillary Clinton, began to have a captive audience for the pharmaceutical industry. ADHD and ADD are another example of capturing young people who are acting out in normal ways that historically have always been this, but now saying it's a disease. And then telling people if you don't vaccinate your children, you can't get into school. And then attacking parents as unfit parents that their children should be taken away. Now, right now, there's an effort in California to have a law that could actually arrest parents who are advocating against mandatory vaccines. So where is our freedom of choice? I would not tell a person you must take your vitamins. I wouldn't do that. I would hope they would, but it's not my right. I'm a vegan, but I don't advocate veganism for anyone else. If someone wants to know about veganism, they can listen to a show, read a book, watch a documentary. I'm providing information, but then I step back. I put the information out and I step back and I leave it to the person's own judgment for whatever reason they've come to that moment. Look, right now I have two long-term friends, both of whom will probably die in the next 12 months, if not sooner. Both of whom are very smart people. Both of whom have helped a lot of people, and yet they won't help themselves. Now imagine being me and losing 15 friends, not professional friends, personal friends, over the last 10 years, who didn't have to die. But no matter how close I am to someone, I must always respect their judgment. So if someone wants to eat themselves to death, I can't stop it. I can only advocate to help them if they want my help. I can't force myself, cajole, coerce. So I respect people's freedom of choice, even when the choice is wrong. Last night I had a discussion with a longtime friend who was a part of causing the, look carefully, everything you're being told is wrong. I've done the research. Do your own. I went to L.A., I went to San Francisco, I went everywhere, Washington, Houston, and I interviewed past and present people involved with Pacifica to find out if all these challenges were right, and they were wrong. And behind all of it was the need for power, the need for control, and in the process purging everyone who held a more progressive point of view. And they did that. They succeeded. It was a brilliantly executed coup, and the left being as complicit as possible by not challenging us. Well, two things occurred. One of the people who was responsible for creation of these bylaws and giving Amy Goodman her contract, I actually counseled, actually helped save her life. And she acknowledged this to me, that she's always felt this kind of guilt because of that. But last night the person says, yeah, I was the one who helped with this. They call him Daddy Warbucks. A rich man hell-bent on what he perceived, and he doesn't bear others people's opinion like his own, as right. But he was wrong, completely wrong. Now, how do you look back on something you created as a mess and say, gee whiz, why didn't we have conversations? Why didn't we have dialogue? Why didn't we have responsible and reasonable people look at the facts? Everything was a hyperheated emotion that was being shared. And look at Pacifica today because of that. But no one takes responsibility for bad mistakes. The government never takes responsibility when it's mandating something or telling you that it's newest therapy, you know, this like the Tuskegee experiment. No one lost their job for that. No one stopped, or at least the majority of the media did not stop supporting Clinton because of the disastrous consequences in Libya, because they didn't care. If every person in Libya died, do you think anyone at CNN would give a damn about it? Not at all. So everywhere I look, I see people are not stopping and looking at the consequences of actions, especially the government. The government never apologizes, ever. The government is run by technocrats, lunatics, sociopaths, narcissists, and very misogynist people who should never have power over others because they have exercised no spiritual control over themselves. So when we look at the nanny state, just understand this. We do not have control over our own thoughts today because so many people are competing to tell us that we don't know how to think, we don't know how to reason, we're not a part of the right consensus. So how in the world, according to the natural blaze, and they're correct, how can people live in a free society without informed consent? According to them, most people would say no. Informed consent infers that at every fork in the road, you have a choice. So most Americans have a choice, right? Wrong. In 2010, Obamacare forced American citizens to purchase medical insurance, a federal mandate under the Affordable Care Act. The law required that every American who did not buy health insurance pay a penalty. By law, decisions have been taken away from the patients, such as choosing a doctor or other decisions being forced upon them. Did the people revolt? No. That's how good we are in our society, whether it's privatizing democracy now and then the left saying, isn't that nice? No, you idiots, it wasn't. You're the dumbest people. Or doctors saying, I don't believe in nutrition and meditation and this gobbledygook quackery, so you can only get these. But doctor, you have no proof that what you're giving me works, and I have a lot of proof that it could kill me. Doesn't matter. Your choice is not a part of the regimen. Wow. Then in 2015, California Senate Bill 277 removed the personal belief in religious vaccine exemptions, creating a vaccine mandate that requires all Californian public school children to comply with the CDC schedule of vaccines. Did Americans rebel? Did Californians rebel? No. In fact, the idea is that the majority of Americans, every time they're faced with losing some freedom to the nanny state or the bureaucracies or the technocrats or the special interest groups or the lobbyist demands or the oligarchs behind these puppet idiots we have for presidents and other idiots that run our government, in my opinion, they're all idiots. No, they just lie on a sofa and turn the channel to reality TV. Because there's nothing that will make you feel better about being alive than looking at a 68-size Kim Kardashian ass. Yeah, that's what we prize. We're the problem. Few people speak up about any of these, that the laws are no longer constitutional. No one questions whether or not we engage in due process. No one cares about what happens when we do not follow rules. Instead of marching in the streets and reclaiming our inherent rights, rights granted by virtue of our Constitution, we engage instead in undue process through a corrupt court system. However, asking for permission for inherent rights from an entity that can neither grant nor deny such rights is futile. You cannot change a person's mind. try that. You can't push a rope up a hill. The time and energy alone to fight for what is already yours is draining and meant to distract you from understanding that your freedom to choose comes from nature's laws, not some power in a local corrupt, and they're all corrupt, city councils, state legislatures. Look at the cesspool. If you went into someone's backyard, open up their septic tank, put on a swimming suit, and snorkel and went paddling around in a filled septic tank, that would be cleaner water than what you're going to get if you step foot into the so-called unholy holes of Albany or Trenton or any other state legislature. They're all corrupt. It's only those that get caught versus those that manage to avoid it. So if history is any indication of what is to come, most people will turn the other cheek. As I've said many times, and I will say it again, the fact that you have control over your remote control and your like and your share button doesn't mean that you have control over your life. Remember this, without informed consent of the laws that are enacted at every level and what goes into your body, then you have no freedom. Mandates do not exist in a free society. Under mandates, a constitutional republic shifts to a democratic socialist state where all rights are forfeited. And that's what we have today. So millennials, the future is yours. And if you organize yourself, you could easily take any election. Liberals, as I was growing up, until I saw how Johnson had corrupted the American mind to continue supporting the Vietnam War. We have to become independent so we can see the limitations or strengths of any system we'd previously been a part of. We should be moving away from vulture capitalism and communism and fascism and any other ism to where people are able to stop conforming. When we talk about war and positing ourselves to war instead of what constitutes peace and how do we resolve peace, then we shouldn't have a Trump going to speak with Putin. We should have moral leaders in the Middle East, in the Balkans, in Russia, saying what do we need to do together to disarm this stupid and childish nuclear deterrent program, to take money out of our war movement and put it into a peace movement. What do we need to do to live in harmony together, to save the earth? Until such time that we can do that, then we will not take our time to reflect. And if we can't even decide something as simple as, do I want genetically engineered materials into my body or organic? Do I want to continue eating all this meat that's causing global warming and causing heart disease? Or do I want to evolve into a healthier person? But how can you evolve if you don't evolve your conscious? That is what we're faced with. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Didn't receive any calls. That singer was Sam Cooke. Great voice. And by the way, starting on Monday, I'm going to give you an idea. I promised you that I would have some people go on a road trip. I'm getting an RV. We're outfitting it as we speak with state-of-the-art film equipment and broadcasting so I can broadcast my show every day and have a place while we're traveling. To have someone do food prep and juicing and bikes on the back so we can do some biking and exercise. But I'm going to be going to Philadelphia. I'm going over to film there, the poor people, and then going down to Washington, Baltimore, then Alabama, Mississippi, and Tennessee on this swing, and try to cut through some areas where there's some nice things to see also, and bring all that back as the first part. Then I'm going out to the West Coast a week later, and I'll let you know about that. I'm going to fly out, got an RV out there. I'm going to go from San Francisco down to L.A., working on this new film on poverty. I'll talk more about that on Monday. I just was informed today that my new mouthwash, delicious tasting, quite frankly, I wasn't keen on the taste of my last mouthwash. Great ingredients, but the taste was wrong. This one has got that wonderful cherry taste. The ingredients in Fresh Breath, just in today, spring water and cherry essence and vegetable glycerin, hydrogen peroxide, potassium sorbate, menthol, vitamin C and peppermint oil, olive leaf oil, clove oil, tea tree oil, echinacea, aloe vera, and golden seal. This is brand new. Brand new. No one's even had a bottle. We all had a test in the office to approve it. It's all natural mouthwash, mint flavor. It's the best. Now, here's the deal. I've never done this before. I just thought, let's do something special. This is going to cost you $11.99. That's nothing. But I'm going to throw in two toothpaste. Clean teeth toothpaste. That's got my own proprietary blend of clove oil and tea tree oil and wintergreen oil and myrrh extract and lavender extract and marigold pure dew and basil extract and nutmeg extract and calcium carbonate that's your baking soda and menthol and natural glycerin from a vegetable base and fresh mint essence. It's the best toothpaste there is. And it's got a wonderful mint flavor, and it really helps fight gum disease and bacteria buildup. You're going to get not one, but two tubes of that free. Hence, the offer today is that you're getting a $32 value for $11.99. How's that for a great, great special? Now, I'm going to give you a number in a moment. I don't have the number in front of me. I'm going to ask our engineer to send me over the number so that you can get an order. So, again, here's what the takeaway on this is. You get brand new mouthwash, brand new flavor, wonderful cherry flavor that gives your mouth such a great feel. And I always suggest people take the mouthwash first thing when we get up in the morning and then take a tongue cleaner, take it from the back of your tongue to the front, and you'll see all the bacteria you've taken out. Then rinse your mouth, your mouth's ready to go. Your teeth, your gums, great. And you're getting two. Now, normally, depending upon how much you use, this is like a 2 month supply of toothpaste or three. Call this number. It's only $11.90. It's normally $32 value. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Brand new, just in. And that is the brand new mouthwash. It just got it in today, and we'll send it right out. So you're going to get two clean teeth toothpaste free when you order the mouthwash. It's a $32 value for $11.99. How about that? Now, we're going to go over, and I'm going to play an audio clip. This is what Hillary Clinton said, and the left supported her, and she was right when it came to destroying Russia or cooperating with Russia.
One of the fears that I hear from Russians is that somehow the United States wants Russia to be weak. That could not be farther from the truth. Our goal is to help strengthen Russia.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of good reasons to strengthen Russia, and there's a lot of ways to strengthen Russia. The trouble is the military-industrial complex and the war hawks and the neocons in Washington don't want that to happen. They won't make money if Russia and the United States work together towards disarming themselves and then using their combined strengths to help save the planet by cleaning up their environment. Think of all the good things they could do if they cooperated. You wouldn't know that she ever said that. Now we're going to finish our program today with a part of a report, and only part. And this is, these 13 corporations are Big Pharma and their history and crimes, because before you buy from these corporations, shouldn't you know what their history has been?
In our society, we often correlate legality with safety. We use household products, spray pesticides, and religiously consume drugs such as Ritalin, Adderall, OxyContin, and Prozac. We consume all of this, but how many know who made the drugs and where the corporations came from? Who produces the chemicals we trust on a daily basis? These 13 corporations tend to be a blind spot in our understanding of history. Tens of thousands of American toddlers are being prescribed amphetamine, a result of this blind spot. Neos Therapeutics is responsible for candy-flavored children's amphetamine, sold as Adzenys. Shire created Adderall. An understanding of Big Pharma is conducive to a big-picture understanding of the world and power itself. It is an essential puzzle piece in understanding disease, hegemony, and health. For instance, we have Purdue. Purdue Pharma was created in 1892, New York. They are arguably responsible for the epidemic of opioid addiction in the United States, producing hydrocodone, OxyContin, fentanyl, codeine, hydromorphone, and oxycodone. Novartis is the world's largest pharmaceutical corporation by revenue, headquartered in Basel, Switzerland, a 1996 merger between Ciba Geigy and Sandoz. Novartis is responsible for many drugs, from Ritalin to LSD. Novartis has a long criminal record. They are known for animal cruelty, for drilling the heads of cats open, to experimenting on primates. Sandoz polluted the Rhine River in the 1986 Sandoz chemical spill. Novartis owned Syngenta, one of the world's largest producers of pesticides and GM seeds. Recently, Syngenta was sold to the Chinese government. State-owned ChemChina is now one of the world's largest producers of pesticides and genetically modified seeds. Novartis coerces entire countries into banning cheaper, generic versions of their cancer drugs, namely Columbia. Leaked letters revealed Novartis's control over the Senate Finance Committee, as Columbia was warned that their $450 million in Peace Columbia money would be in jeopardy if they did not crack down on generic versions of the cancer drug Gleevec. Eli Lilly was created in 1876 Indianapolis. They are responsible for Prozac, antipsychotics, cancer-causing bovine growth hormones in cows, and cancer drugs to treat the cancer that may have been given to people through Eli Lilly products. Created in 1849 New York, Pfizer is responsible for Zoloft, Xanax, SSRI antidepressants, Viagra, Advil, Chapstick, Robitussin, and more. In 2014, Pfizer spent $2.6 million paying off politicians. The Nuremberg trials of Nazi Germany produced three corporations on this list. German chemical cartel IG Farben was split into Bayer, BASF, and Hoist, currently Sanofi. IG Farben was Hitler's largest financial backer and was vital to the extermination of millions in Auschwitz, supplying the poison gas and more. Bayer was founded in 1863 Germany. They invented mustard gas and pioneered German chemical weapons. This painting of chemical warfare was commissioned for the breakfast hall of Bayer's Karl Duisberg. He ate breakfast looking at a painting of chemical warfare. Bayer merged into IG Farben Trust in December 1925 to become Bayer again after the Nuremberg trials. Today, Bayer is known for giving thousands of children AIDS through tainted hemophiliac medicine, while internal documents prove they knew it was contaminated. Bayer bought Monsanto in 2016 to create the world's largest seed and pesticide company. Oh, and they also made aspirin. Sanofi, who absorbed Hoist from IG Farben, is the world's largest manufacturer of vaccines. They also produce the allergy medicine Allegra. Severe psychosis in a BBC reporter following Sanofi's yellow fever vaccine is just the tip of the iceberg with this corporation. BASF was another product of IG Farben. Unfazed by the Nuremberg trials, today they are the world's largest chemical corporation. They produce raw materials for pharmaceuticals, plastics, GM seeds, and more. Johnson & Johnson is a household name, known for Splenda, Band-Aids, and baby powder. Unfortunately, their famous talcum powder actually causes ovarian cancer, and they were forced to pay $72 million to a woman who used their product religiously and got cancer. Margaret Hamburg held the highest office at the FDA as commissioner from 2009 to 2015. She ensured Johnson & Johnson's profit through minimal regulation, while her husband's hedge fund, Renaissance Technologies, owned a large stake in J&J. Hamburg's father was president of Carnegie Corporation. Both father and mother served as directors of the American Eugenics Society. Toddlers on Adderall. History of Big Pharma and the major players will provide insight into this blind spot of historical understanding.
Just to let you know that some of the biggest, most powerful, and profitable corporations in the world, including those making GM products and vaccines, have some of the most sordid backgrounds and histories. We should not be supporting these companies on any level and making them even more powerful still. I want to thank you all for listening today. And by the way, one person did call in, as it turns out, and got the answer right, Sam Cook. And that was a person that used to be on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Mitchell Rabin, who has his own show and is a good person out there helping other people get well. Have a nice day, everyone. Look forward to sharing more on our next program.